The U.S. government dysfunction continues to be on very clear and public display. And there are two issues that are really roiling us right now that put it front and center in front of everybody, makes it impossible to ignore any longer. And as we start to see this, as these things start to manifest themselves, we're starting to realize that the consequences could be quite serious. And this is no longer just some kind of an eye-rolling thing and, oh, they're crazy up there in Washington. These are things that are starting to have real-time biting impact on Americans at home and on other people abroad. And we better do something to get this in check. And I think right now the only thing that's going to check this is the people of the United States of America. And they have shown that if they get properly motivated and properly organized, things can happen. And we better hope that they continue to do that. First of all, let's take a look at what's going on in Venezuela. We've been talking a lot about this, and I've been mentioning several times about the rule of law and how the government must be governed by the rule of law. And if it's not, then it's going to be a dangerous and dark place. And I specifically mentioned the Constitution. That's Article 1, Section Article 1, Section 8, Section 8, Clause 11, which is the declare war clause, where it's only the Congress. I've also mentioned the 1973 War Powers Act. Those are the things that govern us. Now, as it turns out, I'm not the only one. There are some people that are paying attention to this. And on Thursday, there was a debate in the Senate about the War Powers Resolution and about the War Powers, the different branches of government actually imposing themselves and doing something about it. So the Senate was going to debate, is this issue in the Venezuela with blowing up these boats and potentially going after Maduro and all the combat power that the president has sent down there, is it legal and is it justified? As part of that debate, I want to take a look at a couple of things. First of all, the resolution itself was pretty straightforward. It says this is a joint resolution to direct the removal of the United States armed forces from hostilities within or against Venezuela that have not been authorized. Now, that was what the debate was up. It was pretty straightforward. Is this authorized or is it not? So at least the Senate is doing part of its job by debating it. So good on that. As part of this debate, though, Lindsey Graham went on the Senate floor to give his view of it.
Wonder how many times a commander-in-chief has used military force to defend the nation without a declaration of war. Hundreds, if not thousands of times in the last 250 years. So the norm in this country is that military conflicts are not carried on under a declaration of war. Military conflicts, which they've been a lot of, Korea, Vietnam, on and on and on, are engaged in by a commander-in-chief who feels a need to use military force depending on what the threat is. The question before the body is, can the Congress stop a military conflict declared by the commander-in-chief because we don't agree with their decision, and without our approval, it must end? And the answer unequivocally to me is no.
Yeah, no, it doesn't matter what it is to you. The answer is definitely equivocal, and it is not a clear-cut no. Now, let's take a look at some of the things specifically he said. Now, he says, now, listen, there's been hundreds, if not thousands, he says, since in the last 250 years, where the executive branch has used power and they didn't have a declaration of war. He said that there were five times in our history where there has been a declaration of war, and obviously a whole bunch more than that use of force. Now, of course, he doesn't get into the details. Many of those times, like Desert Storm and some others, did have congressional authorization if they didn't have a declaration of war. Some of them did. A great many of them, especially since 1973, have not, and that's a big problem. But let's take a look at his logic first of all. He says there's been a lot of military efforts to use to defend the nation. Okay, most of the time we use force, a vast majority of the time, it has nothing to do with defending the nation. It has to do with foreign policies decided by the administration, whoever the president happens to be at that time. It's just an extension of America's foreign policy by means of lethal military power. That is supposed to be the way the framers designed our country from the beginning, was supposed to not be the case. Because when you have basically a sovereign or a king, and as it was, that gets to make unilateral decisions on the use of force, then the country, it's too easy to get them sucked into war. They didn't want that. That was happening all over the world at the time. So they drew a very clear delineation between the sovereign, the president, and the legislative branch, Congress. That's where it was reside. So it was plain, very clear. That's where it was. The president is the commander in chief. So once Congress authorizes something, then the commander in chief is charged with actually carrying it out. That's how the system was designed. It was never designed to just be an extension of foreign policy and that the sovereign could use whatever force he deemed necessary. He goes on there and just says, again, he says, you know, all these conflicts that we've done is because the commander in chief has decided this is what he needs to do. And he says, especially the phrase he uses was the commander in chief who feels a need to use force. That is the antithesis of what our form of government has been and what we have claimed has been a country that's following the rule, the international rules-based order and all that. And especially since the end of World War II, where we're supposed to say we're trying to be a calming influence and to keep at bay all these other countries that might want to do nefarious things, etc. And now then, you're hearing one of the leading senators who's been on the floor for a long time now and is listened to a bit of golfing buddies with the president. Now it's just whatever he feels like needs to be done. And then he actually goes on and says, and is it the case? He said the issue before the body right now, this resolution, is it okay for the Senate and Congress, if we don't agree with something, to say, no, that you can't do that? That should have been a rhetorical question. Of course, that's what the Congress is supposed to do. That's precisely what it's supposed to do. But no, he says, no, we don't, if we don't agree with his decision, then no, we can't do that. He says it's unequivocal. So he literally handed over the power to the president of the United States to do whatever he wants with power. This one, President Trump, or any who will follow after him. And he looked behind it. He says, it's happened hundreds or thousands of times, he claims. In another speech that he's given, I think this past week, he specified that 130 times since 1973, the president has used power without congressional authorization, without a declaration of war. Now, because you violated the law a bunch of times, that's not a rationale to just keep doing it, because now that you're just shredding your own power, Senator, and saying that I don't care what the Constitution, what the four framers intended, I don't care what the Constitution says, we're just not going to go down that path. And of course, the Declare War Clause, the Article 1, Section 8, Clause 11, you know, is the one that says Congress has it. Well, it's because that wasn't very detailed. And because of abuses in the previous other presidents in the Nixon era, Congress clarified that and made it a little bit clear. So they said, you know what, we're going to have a War Powers Act. So in 1973, you had the War Powers Act. And this is so important, and it is so often just blown away and perverted and misinterpreted intentionally, I think, in the public sphere. So I'm going to clarify that for you right here. The constitutional powers of the president as commander-in-chief to introduce United States armed forces into hostilities or into situations where imminent involvement in hostilities is clearly indicated by the circumstances are exercised only pursuant to 1, a declaration of war, 2, specific statutory authorization by Congress, or 3, a national emergency created by an attack upon the United States, its territory or possessions, or its armed forces, period. You see that? There is a period right there. That's it. There's no like this freedom of 60 days. You can do whatever you want. There's no like, well, you can do what you want for a while, and then you have to go report after a 60-day period. None of that. Flat out, look at it again, 3 things. You cannot bring the armed forces into hostilities or into situations where imminent hostilities involvement in hostilities is clearly indicated by the circumstances are exercised only pursuant to a declaration of war, statutory authorization, or that we have been attacked. None of those things are at play in Venezuela. This is as easy as it gets. This is not like, well, see, Lindsey Graham's trying to make, and apparently many of the Republicans did as well, well, you know, I mean, this isn't really a war, so you don't need a declaration of war. It says hostilities. Blowing up boats in the Caribbean Sea with no international authorization when we haven't been attacked is no way, shape, or form an attack on our country. And if anybody wants to try and twist this with a pretzel-like precision and saying, oh, well, because drugs are in these boats and are going to end up in America, so indirectly we're kind of attacked, that's nonsense. And everybody knows that's nonsense. That is legalese crap that's exclusively mumbo-jumbo designed to just say, you can't hold me to this. You know good and well that is not what this is talking about. The law is very clearly talking we were attacked or our national security is at grave peril. None of those cases is the case here. And now then you're even talking about openly regime change. This the just black and white against our laws and against the Constitution. You cannot be a law-abiding citizen and go and do that, to take that under effect and to literally overthrow openly another country because you don't like them. Oh, he wasn't legally elected. I don't want to hear any of that crap because that's all it is. They know it is. And this is dangerous, my friend. Listen to me carefully. Even if you really like President Trump, this is dangerous because it just continues to shred away even the pretense that anyone can constrain the president of the United States, whether Trump or whoever may follow him. This will get to a point to where one of these days there's no constraints, not even the pretense. They don't even have votes like they had on Thursday. They'll just, if he wants to use force, he'll use it. Maybe even on us. And you see, this president is already starting to normalize using military forces on our own shores, in our own cities. He'll come up with whatever reason he wants, but he's normalizing it. And no one's questioning it. No one's stopping and challenging it. No one's challenging it outside either. So it tells President Trump and anyone who will follow him, you can do whatever you want with the armed forces. No one will stop you. And now you have all this precedence behind you, and he's right. We better get back to the point to where we start following our law, or we may one day find ourselves in a war that we don't want, that we suddenly can't win. See, we're not going to do things that are easy, like fire off a bunch of tomahawks and some other stuff into Syria, or like Obama did and go in and overthrow the government in Libya, use some of our air power and use some jets from some other countries as well, help Israel and blow a bunch of stuff in Iran. Those kinds of things, or do stuff in Iraq, assassinate some people in Iraq or Iran, et cetera. We like to control those. Or now down here in Venezuela, maybe even Mexico, maybe Colombia as well. All those are on the chopping block right now. Those are openly talked about, and there's a lot of combat power in the world. But one day we may find ourselves in that we think we can handle something. Then we get into something we all of a sudden can't handle. Or it blows up in our face, and now we're stuck with a war. Because then as soon as somebody starts hitting back and striking back, now then it's like, oh, well, we can't stop now. Now we have to go further, and we have to hit them even harder. I mean, that's pretty close to what happened in Afghanistan. We started off with a very small contingent. You know, we sent in a bunch of special forces and some other folks to help the Northern Alliance, and they overcome the Taliban, et cetera. And all of a sudden, we never left. We stayed there for a number of years, and I was there in 2005 for the first time, and I really got to see it firsthand. It was pretty safe still from 2001 until 2005 when I got there. But all of a sudden, that's when the pushback started, and the Taliban started having more attacks back. And then we're like, all right, well, the next year, let's have a few more troops here, and then let's have a few more troops and get that under control. And all of a sudden, the Taliban starts hitting back harder, and now all of a sudden, there's 140,000 U.S. and NATO troops. And of course, you know, that ended up being a disaster too. So that cost us 20 years. That's what can happen in you when you just don't even worry about the rule of law. You can get sucked into something like that. And that didn't have any big time consequences to it. But there's a day out there somewhere, friend, where we won't be that lucky. And we will, through foolishness, get ourselves into a war that all of a sudden we start to suffer real consequences. And the only way we can protect against that day in the future is to start today following the rule of law. Now, I'm not a senator. I don't have any power, but I can sure put this information out there and tell people we better start doing this because there are real consequences. And that's where we are at the moment on that. And I wish that was all we had to talk about today. But unfortunately, there are other problems that make our government very dysfunctional and is also alarming for different reasons. And that's what this whole government shutdown situation. I want to take a look. First of all, we've been telling you that a lot of this, you may know, on October 1st, we didn't have a budget. We couldn't agree that the House, the Senate, Republicans and Democrats, they couldn't come to an understanding. And so the government went into a shutdown situation. And the whole thing centered on at the beginning was the Democrats primarily said that they want an extension on the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, subsidies that millions of Americans need in order to have effective health care. The Republicans have never liked the ACA, and they didn't want to do that. And they said, no, we want a clean CR, continuing resolution. They wanted something, they said, for 7 weeks, which was, it's only going to say, we'll just keep funding the government at the same levels it was, wouldn't change anything. And during that 7 weeks, we'll talk about it. So it became a pissing contest. The Republicans said, no, do it our way, or it's not going to happen. And the Democrats said, no, I don't want to do it your way. I want to do it my way. We're going to figure out those ACA things, and then we'll talk about all the other negotiated parts to get the thing open. And then we'll sign your CR. This is what they said. So it was a pissing contest between the two, and it dragged on, you know, for over a month. Well, as you know, certainly on Tuesday, there was a dramatic change in the electoral map on the United States, and the motivation and the momentum swung way over to the Democratic side because it was this big blue wave in New York, New Jersey, Virginia, and in California and a couple of other places in Georgia and some other big, huge, huge success for the Democrats caught everybody by surprise. I don't think anybody expected such an overwhelming clean sweep on the Democratic side. Well, as I said, right after this happened, that is going to put people in a position now then on the Democratic side to where they're like, okay, hang on. We don't need to worry about giving in on this right now, because up to that point, I thought that the Democrats were starting to wobble because their position didn't look very good, because the Republicans are saying, look, we'll talk about these ACA things, but it's got to be after a clean CR is done, then we'll worry about all that. And the Democrats just said, no, that's not going to happen. But now then it's like, okay, well, you're not going to get it. So just give in to them. Actually, my wife had a great idea. And she said, if I was the Democrats, I would have just said, okay, we're going to trust you to do what you say politically. So we're going to sign the CR, but we want some assurances that you're going to do what you say and then negotiate these things after, during the rest of the CR time. And then if the Republicans didn't do it, now then in the court of public opinion, they look really bad because they promised something. The Democrats took them at their word, and then they backpedaled on it and didn't do it. The Democrats didn't want to do that. Well, now they're definitely not going to do it. And as we see now, we have, let's see, let me pull this one up here. Senator Chris Murphy said, put into words what I suspected at the time. And then he said, and I think this was on Friday, was very clear to say, yeah, we're not doing that.
I think there will be some pretty substantial damage done to a Democratic brand that has been rehabilitated. If on the heels of an election in which the people told us to keep fighting, we immediately stop fighting. If we surrender without having gotten anything, and we cause a lot of folks in this country who had started to believe in the Democratic Party to retreat again, I worry that it will be hard to sort of get them back up off the mat in time for next fall's election.
And so you can see there, he is very much focused on the 2026 midterms. And exactly what we suspected, Senator Murphy, that are just validated. And it's logical. You don't have to like it, but it is logical. They just had this huge clean sweep, and now Democrats all over the United States are encouraged by that, and they're saying, yeah, keep going with that. And so right on the heels of getting that, and I mean right on the heels, he's right. You don't have to agree with him or like it, but he is correct in that his party would be excoriated, his leadership, if right after having this big victory, then they immediately just capitulate to the Republican side. So they're not going to. So now then that puts us in a much bigger position and a much bigger problem. You know, how are we going to find an end to this? Because the alternative, the other side of that same coin is also applicable on the Republican side because of the loss that they had here, is that now then, because they were kind of seen being in a position of strength. I mean, they have the White House, they have the House, they have the Senate, so they have the levers of power, and they could have just made a decision to say, okay, fine, we'll just give you this ACA extensions, but everything else we're going to keep for ourselves. They could have said that, but now then they're like, well, if we give in to the Democrats now, then not only have we lost all this other stuff, but we'll lose even more, and all of our voters will see that we're not standing up for them and that we're weak need, and then come into the 2026 midterm election, then we'll get swapped out too. That's what they're concerned about. Well, there are other things concerned about as well, because now then we're faced with, well, what are you going to do now? The government is shut down. The air traffic is really starting to snarl up. They started officially forcing that the 40 major airports around the United States to curtail by 10% the flights because of issues with the air traffic controllers being forced to work without being paid, TSA agents, et cetera. All kinds of, I'm sure you've seen information on the television about how awful that's been here. You have the SNAP benefits. Now that they're starting to not be paid and people are hurting because of that. There's also issues with a lot of people that are not doing with, especially the SNAP stuff. That's like 40 million people or so. And then, of course, the ACA themselves, the health care costs are going to go through the roof for like 20 something million Americans starting on January 1st if this doesn't get fixed. So there's a lot of stuff that's starting to affect a lot of people. And of course, I always remember that the Americans who work for our government, 700,000 strong, are not getting paid either. And so all of these people are struggling. Bills are due, electric bills, gas bills, a mortgage, rent payment, car payments, food, all those kinds of things. It's starting to be a big pain across the board as these two parties can't figure it out and nobody wants to give in on anything. Well, in case you're kind of wondering how it works, especially in the Senate right now, one of the things President Trump is saying, and I showed you this before also, he's trying to say, hey, let's forget about, the 60 vote requirement. Let's just get rid of that completely. No filibuster. And let's just go with the straight up vote. Now, Bernie Sanders explained a little bit. He's an independent senator from Vermont, has previously run as a Democrat for president sometimes, for those who know. He kind of explained what this 60 vote, really, he explained what's going on and what is at stake right now between the two sides.
The shutdown took place 5 weeks ago because the majority party, in this case the Republicans, need 60 votes in order to pass a government budget. They only have 53 votes. The Democratic caucus has 47. And what has always happened under these circumstances is that the majority party sits down and negotiates with the minority in order to get the 60 votes. That always happens, except now. For the first time that anyone can remember, Republicans have said it is our way or the highway. We are not negotiating it. You take it or you leave it. And that's the way it is. And then to add insult to injury, to make it clear that they have no intention of negotiating, unbelievably, at a time when federal employees are not getting paychecks, when kids are being threatened without getting the nutrition they need through the SNAP program, when air traffic controllers are not being paid, in the midst of all of that, the Republican Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, has given his members of the House of Representatives, a six-week paid vacation. Incredibly, they are not here in Washington, D.C. They are home, God knows, doing what?
Now, I don't care what party you're in. That is malpractice to me. I mean, you're not even doing any work at all. So, yeah, the federal government is shut down, but Congress isn't. Congressmen are still getting their pay. Senators are still getting their pay. So by all rights, and the Senate is in session, as I understand, by all rights, you should be in session at least doing something. But no, he's completely keeping them out of session at all. So they're literally doing no work for anyone. So obviously that's kind of a stuck in my craw. And I'm certainly agreeing with Senator Sanders on that. But that's one side of the view here. Now, the other side, in the Republican side, there was a Senator John Kennedy using his old folksy way of describing things as he does. He says, yeah, you know, I just don't know what's going on. I don't know what these guys are doing. We're trying to help out, but they're just not playing ball.
In my opinion, we're nowhere near getting out of this shutdown. The Democrats, supposedly we were told today at lunch that we're going to have a vote tomorrow and that the so-called moderate Democrats have come together and they're going to support us. I think they're still stamping their little feet. I don't believe they will support us. And I've never believed any of this stuff. Around here, it's not what you say, it's what you do that shows what you believe, and everything else is just cottage cheese. I think we're going to be shut down at least 10 more days, maybe 2 weeks, maybe longer than that. And I don't know what else to do. I've voted 14 times to open up government. They've voted 14 times to keep it closed down, and all they ever do is talk and stamp their little feet and keep government shut down and blame us.
Yeah, I just don't know what else to do. I voted for 14 times to keep the government open, and they voted 14 times to close it down. Well, now, if that's all you listen to, you think, yeah, man, boy, those Democrats suck, man. They're doing terrible stuff. And boy, those Republicans, they're just trying to help us out. And he's done everything he can. Okay, when he says that we voted to open it up, let me translate that into English for you. They want a clean CR, continuing resolution, which, as I said a minute ago, just means a continuation of the funding levels that were from the previous fiscal year for some period of time. And then the government will reopen, and then we'll figure out whatever happens next. And however long that turns out to be, it was going to be 7 weeks initially. Then they're going to come up to the same issue again, where the government will again shut down if they don't have some kind of negotiated deal to have a new funding issue. So all these difficulties, even with the CR, is going to be a hard time. But when he says, I don't know what else to do, oh, there is definitely something else to do. See, you can say we're going to deal with these ACA subsidies right now. There is absolutely no reason under God's earth that the Republicans should not have been, and the Democrats should not have been, every day in a room somewhere, in a conference call, on Zoom, however they want to do it, talking about the issues of the ACA. So instead of waiting until the Republicans said, no, we either get a clean CR, period, we won't talk to anyone, we won't do anything until we get exactly what we demand, and then and only then we'll talk about these other issues. Now, as I've said, the Republican Democrats do deserve some blame too, because they could have said, all right, for the good of the nation, we're going to go ahead and do this and we'll trust you, like my wife suggested. So what they could have done, and they chose not to do that even before the blue wave last Tuesday. But the fact is now that both of them are not doing anything that's going to be necessary. And from the Democratic perspective, Bernie Sanders again explained what that would actually mean.
If Democrats, and myself as an independent, were to agree to the Republican clean resolution, it would mean that over 20 million Americans would see a doubling in the health care premiums through the Affordable Care Act. 20 million. That's on average. In my state of Vermont, I'm hearing from people who are looking at a tripling or a quadrupling of their health insurance premiums. People cannot afford that. And as a result, people will lose their health care. Further, if we were to agree with the Republican proposal to pass their clean resolution, it would mean that 15 million Americans will next year be thrown off the health care they currently have, because in Trump's big, beautiful bill, the Republicans made massive cuts to Medicaid.
So you see that the Democrats are really focused on, no, we really want this issue here. Now, there have been a number of things that they have also wanted. But as it turned out, just last night, let me pull this up here. Just last night, the New York Times reported that they have scaled back their demands, but the GOP digs in. So even though they had all of this headwind behind them and the political momentum, we find this out in the New York Times last night. Senate Democrats on Friday substantially scaled back their demand for ending the government shutdown, saying they would be willing to do so in exchange for a one-year extension on expiring health care subsidies. But Republicans immediately rejected the offer, leaving lawmakers no closer to ending a stalemate that has shuttered the government for 38 days. The proposal announced by Senator Chuck Schumer of New York, the minority leader never had much hope of moving through the Republican-led Congress. Speaker Mike Johnson has refused to commit to even allowing a vote on extending the Obamacare subsidies, with many Republicans opposed to renewing the tax credits, at least without major changes. Senator John Thune, Republicans of South Dakota and the majority leader, called the idea a non-starter. And so you got to ask, what do you mean a non-starter? Why is that? Why is even talking about that one thing a non-starter? Why will the House not even vote on it if the Senate did come to some kind of an agreement on that? What this is starting to look like is that the Republican in both the House and the Senate just want to kill the ACA. And you can't do it like this, my friend. You can't. Again, if you're a dyed-in-the-wool MAGA guy, if you have been a Republican for your whole life, you can't do it like this. You can't destroy it by just not funding it with no plan. It would be a different matter if the Republican Senate said, you know what, we're not going to do these ACA things because we think it's bad for X, Y, and Z, whatever reasons you want to put up there. And here is our plan. We've got a plan right here. Let's go with that. We'll vote on this one. And you can look at it, and it's like an actual executable plan, not the outlines of a plan, not the contours of a plan, not a general idea, but an executable plan. If they had something like that, then there might be some room to do it, because then the American people would have a chance to see. Here's what the ACA is. Here's its benefits, its flaws. Here's the limitation, whatever it is. And then here's this other plan, which the Republicans would say, this is better, this is great, and whatever. And so, see, isn't this great? The worst thing that you can do, however, is say, we're not going to even talk about getting this health care for millions of Americans. And by the way, a lot of the people who were on this health care, make sure that you understand this if you're pro-Republican. I think the number I saw was somewhere around 54% of all the people on this are Republican voters. So you're not just harming the Democratic Party, even though that's their, you know, their Obamacare thing. That's what something that's been like a pillar for them for a long time. You're harming your own voters, and you're willing to harm Americans across the board and your own voters because you don't like the Democratic stuff and you are unwilling to put forth a viable alternative. It's just unconscionable that you want to do that. And this doesn't even make political sense. What are the Republicans going to do here? Because just imagine in the court of public opinion, which is what makes so much, you know, and important. And you talk about heading into the 2026 midterms, man, the Trump administration desperately needs to do whatever he can to try to hang on to the House, because if he loses the House, they may hold on to the Senate. Who knows whether that's going to happen? Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But historically, the House, or the party that has all three of the branches there, the two in the Congress and then the White House, they lose seats in the midterms. So that's historic, just normal. This isn't normal. There's a lot of things going on right now, a lot of reasons. And this, the whole issue of this vote last Tuesday showed there are some major headwinds across the country that are going against the Republicans. So you should do everything in your power to get the people back on your side. And you should say, okay, let's take care of the people. Let's make sure they get SNAP benefits. Let's make sure that they get health care, that we get this thing solved. And so nobody has to be afraid of losing health care or being having have this huge financial burden thrown on top of their shoulders in an already weakening economy. That's not a way to win hearts and souls, friend. If you're a Republican, that's not going to get it done. And listen, that's not the only thing the Republicans are doing here. I mean, check this out here. This is just almost hard to believe. There was a Supreme Court decision that said that the administration has to use funds that it has to pay these SNAP benefits to the people. And instead, the administration is taking it to the Supreme Court. A federal appeals court on Friday denied a last-minute attempt by the Trump administration to halt food stamp funding for the federal shutdown, prompting the government almost immediately to challenge the decision at the Supreme Court. How do you think that is going to go over when people are saying, man, you have the money to help the least expensive, the least financially well-off Americans, the people who need help to eat, and you're ordered by a federal court to use the money that you have so that they don't lose their benefits. And you say, no, I'm going to fight that. I'm going to take it to the Supreme Court not to help those people. What do you think that they're going to be thinking, friend? Heading into the midterms, or even heading into Saturday, said heading into this weekend, they're going to be saying, man, you're not willing to negotiate these subsidies that millions of Americans lean on and need desperately. You're going to the Supreme Court to prevent food from getting to the Americans who have the most financial need and help in eating, and you're blocking that. And so now then the Democrats are coming off looking pretty reasonable. They're like, okay, we'll pare it all down. It's one thing. Just extend the ACA for 1 year. That's it. Just 1 year. And then in the interim, then we'll negotiate whatever else. If you will have a better plan, then put it out there and let's put it out there for all the people to see. And let's just make a decision. Which one's better? Should we do something fixed to ACA? Should we continue those subsidies on, or do you have a better plan? That gives you a year to get it done. That sounds kind of reasonable. But instead, the Republicans are just categorically against it. The House of Representatives won't even vote on it if the Senate did it, and the White House is going to the Supreme Court to make sure that they don't pay any money to the people who need it. I mean, this is like cutting your own throat politically for the Republicans. So in addition to all the bad things that happened to them on Tuesday, it's like they're doubling down and wanting to harm their own self. I mean, this is just dysfunction at the highest level. So now then you got the Democrats, because I'm promising you, I can't imagine any chance in this world that the Democratic Party, with the victory they just had last Tuesday, and then now then putting this pretty reasonable plan and having it just categorically rejected by the Republicans, are going to like say, all right, never mind. Yeah. I mean, Senator Murphy was right there. I mean, the leadership of the party would be fired, and the rank and file Democrats would get rid of them. They would fire them in a minute if, with all of these momentum, they just, you know, sabotage. You just gave the Republicans everything they'd been asking for from the beginning, which is a clean CR with no promises of anything else. There's no way they're going to do that. And so now then, though, you have the Republicans saying, we're not going to give in now, because then it would look like we're capitulating, et cetera. So where does that leave the government of the United States of America? It's a humiliation. It's a shame on us all. We brag about how we got the greatest military power in the history of the world, that we're, you know, Reagan's a shining city on a hill and all that. And that we're being mocked through the rest of the world. Other countries, they have universal health care of various kinds. And I'm not talking about, you know, the communist countries. I'm talking about wealthy European countries. I'm talking about Israel. Israel has it. Are we not as good as Israel? You want to call them commies or something? You see what I'm saying here? We can't take care of our people. We don't follow the rule of law. We're killing whoever we want to be. We want to kill. And remember, it was just a few days ago that Tucker Carlson was mocking Senator Graham because he bragged in a speech, hey, the Republican Party's got it going on. We kill people that need to be killed, and we always get rid of taxes, et cetera. That's how you want to be known. And of course, and now then neither side can even function the government. So nothing is getting done. None of the work for our country is getting done. I mean, all those issues right now are things that are pressing forward right now. But none of the other work is getting done on anything. And who knows how much longer this is going to go. I guess the one thing Senator Kennedy was right about is that this probably isn't going to get done in the next couple of weeks. And Thanksgiving is right around the corner. And the issue already with the air traffic control is only going to get substantially worse. And now then you're talking tens of millions of people in the United States are going to be really put out in difficulties, addition to not being able to eat or having to pay a lot for food aid. Those are the things that are going on right now. And I if there's anything I could say to both parties, y'all get into a damn room. No food, no water, nobody comes out until you have a deal. I don't care who has to give in on something. I don't care if somebody has to give in on some and somebody a little, or if it's a lot, if it's equally, I could care less. For the sake of the United States, and if you want to have any semblance of rationalization and justification to be able to say you serve the people of America and you believe in our country and you want our country to be great, never let those words cross your lip again if you're not willing to do whatever it takes to get this government back up and functioning like a normal country. Because right now, a pox on both of you, because neither one of you are willing to do anything. You're willing to put your party above the nation, period. I don't care what anybody says. That is a fact. And I, for one, am sick of it. And I'm just ready for you guys to finally do whatever it takes to get this done. Look, there's not any stupid people on either side here. This could get done. Really smart people on both parties, they could get this knocked out. And I'm not exaggerating, in an evening. I mean that. I'd put y'all in a room. Nobody gets to go out. Nobody gets anything to eat until you come back and do it. And they would. They would. They would be able to do it. But they don't want to do it because they're looking for political advantage at the expense of the other, and they're both fine with all these Americans paying the price for doing it. That's the bottom line. That is dysfunction at the highest level. And it's only going to get worse if we don't hold people to it. And I don't have any great ideas right now about what we can do as people, but I mean, the people certainly made their voice heard on last Tuesday, and I can only hope that we could do something again. Now, what I would personally recommend is get rid of every member of Congress at the 2026 midterms. You know what? Don't vote for any incumbent of any party, House, Senate, whoever's running. Nobody who's in office right now gets reelected. I would love to see people just finally say, you know what? A pox on all of you. We're going to clean house and fire all of you. And we're going to find and see if we can get somebody else in there who is willing to prioritize and value the American people and will sacrifice for themselves whatever it takes to benefit and raise up the American people. And, oh, by the way, you can follow the rule of law while you're at it. That would be a great bonus. That's what I'd like to see. Put it in the comments down here if you think that that's a good idea. Or, I mean, if you got some better ideas, lay that on us too, because I'd love to hear from you. Thanks very much, folks. Really appreciate it. And we'll look forward to seeing you on the very next episode of the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.